In a world of uncertainty, one thing is for sure. Cancer doesn't stop during a global crisis. On Saturday, June 13th, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, LLS, will host a trailblazing event, Big Virtual Climb, sponsored by AbbVie, to support their investment in groundbreaking research to advance blood cancer cures and its first-in-class patient education and services, including financial support and clinical trial navigation. Step up to take cancer down by climbing 61 floors or 1,762 steps. Inside or outside, on stairs, on the road, or your treadmill, climb your way. Join us for an opening ceremony and then take on your climb with our heart-pumping playlist. Join us on June 13th from coast to coast as we come together to climb, conquer, cure. Register at lls.org/bigclimb. That's lls.org/bigclimb. Dan, do you know who Ricky G on Twitter is? J. Richard Goodman.
No.
J. Richard Goodman is the handle. He's in the Warriors Twitter, but a little bit outside of it. Just a guy in San Diego with some AAU connections, and wait, these tweets are just kind of funny.
Great avatar.
Oh, that's my favorite part. The shades. Adam Silver wants to make everyone happy, especially the elite players. He can't or not capable of making a decision by trying to please friends. ... Can someone send Silver a dog so he has a friend and he can start to lead? ... Or better yet, give him the NHL commissioner phone number.
Has there ever been an argument for Gary Bettman ahead of Adam Silver?
So here's the thing. I know Gary Bettman is one of those sports commissioners' names that people sneer when they say it. I don't know anything about Gary Bettman. I don't know anything about hockey. You're from the Midwest. I'm from San Diego. Hockey is not something that has ever existed as far as I'm concerned.
How dare you? Go Gulls.
Yeah, I mean, I was aware of the minor league hockey team and that asbestos-infested San Diego sports arena.
Absolutely.
I know of them. I'm aware of them. Look, when I was growing up, there was always Chick Hearn and the Lakers on TV. There was no LA Kings. Sure. Or if there was, nobody clued me into it. I didn't know a single person growing up, a single person who was a hockey fan. Not a one. To a man. And woman.
When I was growing up in Chicago, hockey, like the Hawks weren't, their home games weren't broadcast on TV. They had like a local blackout. And so and they had the misfortune of like playing at the same time as the Bulls. So like, even though there were like some pretty good Blackhawks teams, like none of my friends cared at all either. And then as we got older and like the Hawks had like a really good run, like we all kind of got into it. And I mean, I don't know. I think I know three players currently on the team. Like, I do appreciate though that because I'm from the Midwest, I must be drawn to ice. Mm. I do appreciate your regionalism.
Yeah.
Hi, Jade, by the way.
What up? How you doing, Dan?
I'm good. All man. I know about the Blackhawks is that when a goal is scored, they play that song, and I don't know the name of the song. That's all I got. I can't actually replicate it.
Back ahead comes Seabrook with a shot. He scores!
They also have a really, really good, like, 70s, like, intro song called Here Come the Hawks. It's one of the things that, like, I really appreciated about last year's Milwaukee Bucks team was that they had their own song. Like, they had, like, a team song.
Is it embarrassing that I, in basketball media, was not aware of this? I did not know.
No, not really. It's called Let It Fly. The Bucks are what's hot, there's no need to deny. So what we gonna do? Let it fly, let it fly. That blue, green, and cream make opponents running high. So what we gonna do? Let it fly. Like, I wish more teams had songs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember in the 90s, there was Go New York, Go New York, Go for the Knicks.
Yeah.
Awesome. Was it modeled after the Vanilla Ice Go Ninja song
from the second Turtles movie?
Yeah. Is that the modeling, or am I wrong?
The secret of the ooze.
No, if the soil is contaminated so far away, there must be more leaky canisters than we thought.
But how can that be? They were only buried 15 years ago.
15, 50. Just make sure the rest are found and removed.
Maybe it wasn't such a good idea to invite the press.
Sometimes the best way to hide is right out in public.
If any of it fell into the wrong hands...
I'm well aware of the risks.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Welcome to the House of Strat on the Athletic Podcast Network. Si un jour tu m'emmènes à la plage, j'aimerais t'en plonger dans les vagues. Je te promets que je resterai sage, mais tu ne comprends pas que je rêve de ça.
Quand l'été est là. Okay, so that is why we have Dan Wojcicki here of the LA Times with us. Is that right there, sir? That right there. So, I look, you know, not that you didn't always fascinate me, Dan, but
sure.
I remembered something. So, and I don't want to hurt your feelings if you didn't know about it, but I was supposed to go to a dinner, a fancy Kevin Arnovitz dinner in San Francisco at a fancy place. And it was very exciting. But we had an athletic team dinner, and I had to go. It was business, so I could not go. And I guess you were in town, and so Kevin just slotted you in. And I asked about it, and Kevin said, "Dan is the ultimate dinner companion, the ultimate generalist. You put him in there, and anywhere the conversation goes, he can follow. If it's sports, obviously, pop culture, boom, TV, movies, music, he's got it all. You won't skip a beat. You won't skip a beat. If somebody drops out of a dinner and you put Wojcicki in there, it just goes." How do you feel about that?
I love hearing that, mostly because I like hearing people say nice things about me. So like it's great to hear that. I think it's kind of honestly a byproduct of two things. Like one, this is stupid, but I like people. Yeah. And I like talking to people, and I don't know, my colleagues would tell you that this is annoying, but like I am like way more a call instead of a text person because I like sort of the the randomness that conversations can go, right? Like I was talking to a general manager about kind of working remotely and sort of the pros of it, and you know, to him, like one of the biggest cons was that you know, you don't have what he called collisions, right? Which are like these unplanned sort of events where you're in the office and you walk by someone's office, the door is open. Maybe you hear something like hear a YouTube clip playing or whatever, and you just launch into a direction that you had that was not planned at all, right? Yeah. And I think text messages, generally speaking, are targeted. Like you have to be like, I have a thought. I want to send said thought. I'm going to text it. And then that is like, it is a direct line conversation. Whereas a phone call or a dinner or just like standing in the hallway outside of a locker room or whatever, or those face-to-face interactions with players, like they can go anywhere. And I think that's what's fun. I mean, I would way rather speak to and communicate to someone like that than kind of just be like, it's sort of like, you know, like those kindergarten sentences where it's like, you know, subject, verb, boom.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. I'm reminded of there was a great Michael Lewis article on Barack Obama. It was near the end of the presidency and what it's like. It was really less about Obama and more about what it's like to be in that particular orbit and how surreal it is, how it's this moving bubble. And to be around Obama or any president, you need to have some sort of lanyard, some sort of badge, and that marks you as somebody who should be inside the bubble, but then you can, you know, you get outside of it and you can't get back in, and this is just where he lives his life. It's a very surreal way to do it. And Obama was saying that of the things he doesn't have because of the way he lives, there are no moments of serendipity. I guess he called collision serendipity. There are no moments where he and his wife are at dinner and they run into an old friend. That's not going to happen. You trade it all to be president of the United States. I don't think anybody is crying for Obama that he lacks moments of serendipity, but it's one of those things that you don't think about giving up until it's gone that makes life more interesting, that there are these interactions that can go anywhere.
So I went golfing this weekend. It was like my first sort of like go outside moment and do something in what, 3-4 months or something like that. Like we've been, my wife's a nurse. Like we've been pretty strict about kind of like locking in as much as we can. And it was awesome to be outdoors. Like it was great. But the thing that I think I enjoyed most was honestly like just being able to like go someplace and speak to people like and have unplanned conversations for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Like that was by far the best part. That and like the early morning like beer. But like those were like the two things that I really enjoyed most. And it's something that I think it'll be interesting to see kind of, Ethan, how like we move forward from this, because I'm generally of the belief that like telecommuting, telehealth, all of that stuff is like, is going to be like a bedrock of society coming out of this. Like, I think like commercial real estate is just going to get hammered, right? Because all of these people that have been paying rent are going to realize like, oh, we can function as a job while like, I mean, you're paying your own rent. You're paying a mortgage. You're paying your rent for your house. Like you already have an office. Like you're working from there from now. Like my brother-in-law has already been like moved out of his office. He will be working from home out of this. And like, I just wonder like if we're gonna lose that layer of kind of communication, which has already been eroded by like the ability to just like, you know, if you want to shop for something, you type in a direct search into Amazon. Like you don't browse. Maybe that's the way I put it. I like to like have like I like to browse through conversations. You know what I mean? And like kind of window shop a little bit. We'll find something that we think is interesting, or we'll find something that we think we like, instead of it just being kind of a like, hey Ethan, like hope you're doing well. I have a question for you about Kevin Durant. Is he still mad at you? Like, you know what I mean? Like that's not you're going to go one direction from that. Like you're not going anywhere else.
Yeah. That is an observation. I have not thought about that at all, about how targeted and almost efficient text messages are, but what you lose often is getting to know people. And I'm thinking about, you know, Bob Myers is somebody who's pretty careful and is not going to say anything really out of bounds. But if you're at a practice, if something's on his mind, he's going to come up to you and go, can you explain this to me? Can you explain this to me? Why is it? And it could be anything about how the league is covered, or how a particular player, or how a particular GM is covered. That is never happening over text. And it'd be really strange if it was happening over text. And there are so many conversations like that.
Well, and I think too, like in terms of specifically about covering the league, right, is like there's also, I think, like a text paranoia right now too. Mm. Right. Like in terms of you ask people questions and stuff like that. I've noticed at least a little bit like a sense of from people where it's like, you know, I'll call you. Right.
Yeah.
Or it's because like nobody wants to put it in a print, like, God forbid you get involved in a high stakes free agency. You know what I mean? You have to turn over your phones and be like, oh my God, like this guy was talking to Dan Wyche of all people. Like what horrible judgment, you know? but I think, yeah, I mean, I think there is like an element of that, which I enjoy, like in terms of like reporting about sort of the shutdown and you know, when the league is going to come back. Like obviously, like I've sent text messages and I've had text exchanges with people. By far the most fruitful conversations have been conversations. You know what I mean? Like
I learned. Are you just cold calling your sources now? Is that what you're doing?
I will say this. Just like what is it? Star 6-7 or whatever. is that still a thing?
Redial.
No, that's like you block your number. I think it was Star 69 was the redial, which was like, I think a plan developed by
would happen if you called Chris Paul right now? What would happen?
He'd probably ask me why I ruined the documentary he produced.
Wait, like, explain,
Chris Paul like was one of the producers of the Blackball, the Donald Sterling documentary. That aired on Quibi. And the problem obviously with it was that it aired on Quibi. And not the overall quality, but it was funny. They asked me to be like kind of not Chris Paul himself, like the director and stuff like that. Like I didn't even know Chris Paul was involved till after the project. But they asked me to if you know, because I was covering the Clippers during this time, like could I come by and talk? And so, have you ever done this? Like the documentary interview?
The documentary interview. Are you saying in general or this one specifically?
Like, have you ever done one?
I feel like I could plausibly be involved in this one because I
you
was.
You could be involved in a ton of them. That's
well,
what
I'm saying with this one, I was there. I was present at that sure. particular playoff series. Yes. We actually just talked about it. Marcus, Tim Slater, and I, and we were all recalling our memories of that Warriors Clippers series. But no, I have not been involved in a documentary as far as I know.
So like they call you and, it's like, you know, bring a couple shirts, like whatever. It was last summer. We filmed a few days after my son was born. So I was like exhausted, but like I had done like preliminary interviews with them like years earlier as they like pitched the project and stuff like that. So it was like, I wanted to do it. It was, you know, like, again, I like having interactions with people. Right. So I'm like, yeah, I'll go. So like they have like it was in this warehouse district in Los Angeles, like just like a total like I mean, it's a movie set, right? Like an abandoned warehouse. It's like the place where like The Departed ends. You know, spoiler alert. So
it's like Boston.
Yeah, sort of. Just like empty brick and there's just like DiCaprio's body. It's just like as you have to step over Leonardo as you walk in. You're in this room. And it was probably 90 degrees. And because they're recording audio, like they could have no air, like there's no air conditioning on. Right. So like I'm tired. I've been eating well. And like, so I like, first of all, I think I look like terrible, but then you just sit there and they're just like, tell me about game one. Right. And you're like, in your mind, I was like, all right, well, like, here's what I think I remember. And they talk and then you tell you say what you say. And they're like, all right, now, like, can you say it again in a way that's like clear? Like, can you condense what you said into like two sentences?
Can you make your voice sound like Ernie Johnson? So it would really help.
Right. Do you do Morgan Freeman? It would really. We're looking for a Morgan Freeman.
We need you to sound like a British septuagenarian. It would really add something if you were a little more, you know, Dan Attenborough instead of Dan Wiki. That would help.
So like apparently my condensed sort of storytelling played very well because like I ended up being in this documentary a lot, right? Like I like end up sort of doing like so there's a thing where NBA players have to have a practice. Like I set a lot of scenes. I become sort of a narrator. And the reason why I mentioned this is not to be like, oh, like what a great job I did. But no, it's the one thought, it's funny you mentioned about Chris Paul. The thought that I had watching it, like I couldn't enjoy the documentary. And I mean, I think it was super cool that I got to do it. Like it's fun to be a part of a project that like 15 years from now I can show my son and be like, hey, your dad was a part of this thing, you know? But I think the thought that I enjoyed most was that you know, the director is handing Chris Paul the final cut the first time to be like, here you go. And like seeing me like every 6 minutes, him just being like, dude, we could not, like Stephen A didn't have a better soundbite. Like wait,
I mean, the last dance has David Aldridge. I mean,
exactly. Like was David Aldridge not available? Like we ended up with him. Like where was Mark Spears?
But that's what happens. It's not really about DA. It's not about the status. We are pretty good. I'm not giving myself this kind of credit. This is one of the things we're forced to do is to think in terms of narrative and to fill in some of the skeletal structure of a story with the story. And it's just something that we are geared to do. The players typically aren't. The players are almost conditioned to be boring in many ways and to just get through an interaction without causing some sort of social media controversy. So, yeah, I think I've seen journos find themselves in this role of being more prominently featured in these things, DA included, because it's just something that, you know, maybe we are useless in every other capacity besides this.
I will say this too. The other thing that kind of, as we talk about documentaries, I've had like a couple thoughts lately about them because this has been sort of like all we've had in a lot of ways. Before this, The Last Dance and Lance Armstrong and this Blackwell thing, I'd always assume that they like interviewed people in their own homes. I don't know why. And watching like I had like a blip thought of David Aldridge in the first episode of The Last Dance where it's just like, why is he like, does it's how big is his house? And why does he have just one room that just has a chair in it? It was like the first thought.
I would like to be so rich as to have the interview room where
chair room. I have a lounger in here. There's nothing else. It provides great depth of field in case you ever want to film me in here. It's almost like the confessional room, like in the real world, but just like way more palatial. And then the other thought too, did you watch the Lance Armstrong documentary, Ethan?
No, I saw it only got a million viewers is what people were reacting to. And I saw the viral clip where he was saying, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. But I didn't know it was coming. I think it's a failure of promotion. I had no idea it was happening until I saw people tweeting about it.
I think I said this in an interview the other day, and I liked it so much, I'll say it again. I find him to be a much more credible narrator the longer his hair is. Which, like, when he has sort of like the tighter sort of like Tour de France, like Sheryl Crow divorce haircut, I think he's just like totally like full of shit and like this guy's just out for himself. But like once his hair's grown out a little bit, I'm like, oh, he makes some good points.
He's like a Samson of honesty is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Good band name.
I'll trust you on the band names. I just remember the G League Winter Showcase, which is now prominently featured in my mind as one of the last highly social functions I was at. I just remember running into you and Brent Barry. Now, what is he, vice president of basketball operations for the Spurs?
That sounds right. Yeah.
And you were talking about 1990s band something or other, and you guys were just speaking another. You were speaking Quibi. I couldn't understand what the hell you were even talking about.
We're speaking Quibi. So what? We'd have 6 minutes, and then we'd have to wait for the next one for the next conversation.
Ba-dum-tsh. I know nothing about Quibi. What was that, by the way? I don't want to get too. You know what? We're gonna get digressive. There's only one thing going on, and that thing going on is the thing that's potentially going on right now, which is, when does the season start? How does it start?
Sure.
Which we can also get into because you've written about that. But yes. First, the hell were you talking about with Brent Barry?
I'm trying to remember. I think probably grunge music. I mean, that just seems like sort of a thing. I mean, a conversation. I'm going to digress now too. I don't know the answer to your question. This is going to be like when
You are such a font of gregarity that you cannot possibly remember what's said, how it's said. I would love to know how you start these conversations. I would like to know. I mean,
this is a good tip for everybody. If you're ever in you asked like to kind of about being like a good dinner guest, like this is, and it feels like this is part of my TED talk here. Mm. It's like, if you don't know the answer to a question, just change the question.
Mm.
Right. Like sort of like years ago, like I used to be on Jim Rome's TV show, not Rome is Burning, the CBS show Rome. And I like, it was just total serendipity, really lucky. I'd never really done any TV before. And they were in Orange County. Their budget had been cut a little bit. So like their travel got, they couldn't get people to travel, or they couldn't spend as much money on people to travel. So like they needed people that were in LA, right? And a colleague had recommended me, and so I went and did it. Okay, it was awesome. The people there were super nice. It was an incredible experience in my career to be able to be on TV on a regular basis, to do the talking head thing, and just get comfortable with it, right? So, the problem though was like I was a Clippers beat writer. Like I had never covered the NFL at that point. It had been years since I covered college sports. Like I knew about the NBA. And they would always like give us like 3 minutes of like NBA stuff, like in our like 7 minute segment, right? Because they had an NBA person. But that's like only half of it. So like I had to talk about like, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, like because it's still sports talk TV, right? So like we had to talk about the Dallas Cowboys a ton and stuff like this. And I didn't know anything about it. Yeah. The dirty little secret, right? Like you don't, these people that are on TV don't, you like, nobody knows all of this stuff.
They're not experts.
So they bring up the Dallas Cowboys, and you just like the next thing you know, I'm talking about the 85 Bears.
So that's part of my TED talk, which is that on TV, you don't even have to answer the question they ask. You can just say anything. They just want you to fill the time. That's all they want.
Like hopefully it's crazy. Maybe, you know, like, and that'll be good. And then you can spark an entire days of sort of like news coverage on it. But
well, you can pivot. It's like, yeah, well, that's certainly something to think about. But what's also important to think about is the 85 Bears and that defense, magnifique.
And so that's probably like what Brent Baer and I were like. I mean, that's probably like how that conversation was like, Brent and I were probably, he probably said something really smart and I didn't know anything. And I was like, oh, do you remember the band Local H? Like, or something
like that. he was loving of local it,
talent. Speaking so, of so, local talent.
Hey guys, it's hot out there. Let me tell you, you want to be smelling your best. Smelling good is important. And Hawthorne smells really good. And getting Hawthorne cologne is easy. So you got Father's Day coming up. Great gift for your dad. Everyone likes their dad to smell good. Let me tell you. You can actually go to Hawthorne.cl right now. Take the quiz. That's Hawthorne.cl, not .com. And they'll help you kind of figure out the best scent for you. I used to wear cologne and I actually liked it. I enjoyed smelling me smelling good. So yeah, again, take the quiz and Hawthorne will tell you the two colognes that are best for you. One for work, one for play. Totally risk-free with free shipping and free returns. Check out Hawthorne at Hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne with an E and .co, not .com. Hawthorne.co and use our promo code ATHLETIC to get 10% off your first purchase. That's Hawthorne.co with the promo code ATHLETIC for 10% off your first purchase. Hawthorne.co.
So if we slap the GoPro on your head and we have you go into the locker room, what is your approach? You know, from back when you were a beat writer, what is your approach? Like, what do you do?
So
let's say pregame versus postgame is important as a distinction here. But
so the beat writer thing, like it's obviously my job is different now. In some sense, right? Like I don't have the same level of like intimacy with players that you develop when you're there every day. Right. Like that matters so much. I think like
gives you a context to riff on. Yeah.
Well, and it just like sort of beats them into submission. Like they have no choice but to know you.
Yes.
Right.
And you are also a familiar sight to them on the road that they, it makes them hate you less. Even if they do hate you, it becomes, well, at least he's part of my familiar surroundings. And,
exactly. Right. Like he's miserable too. Like he's stuck in Orlando or wherever else too. Like, you know, he's been away from home for 10 days, like whatever, like you're part of like sort of the orbit. My thing that was always is I would try to find one thing non-basketball related to relate to people on, because I could never relate to them about basketball in that sense. Right. Like that, no matter what, like, I mean, like obviously you talk to people about, like you talk to Chris Paul about basketball or whatever. But like if I was covering Chris Paul right now, I think the thing that I would want to talk to him or try to like small talk with him most about would be like fatherhood. Like it's important to him, you know, whatever. I mean, that has been like it has been a I don't know. I'm sure you found this, too. Like having kids is like a great way to talk to people who have kids. It's an awesome entry point.
Yes.
Like even people like to talk about their children and like what it's like and stuff like that. You know, with Blake Griffin years ago, it was comedy. Like, you know, this is like 8 years ago, where, you know, Blake would talk about how growing up, like he'd come home from school and like, you know, he would turn on Comedy Central in the same way that, you know, I would turn on like MTV when I would get home. Like that was like my thing was like, you get home, you put on MTV, like, and you know, you watch like the top 20 video countdown or, you know, MTV Raps or whatever. Like Blake would come home and watch Comedy Central and watch like the 30-minute. Like they'd be the 30-minute stand-up specials or the old British episodes of Whose Line Is It Anyways?
I would watch like the Wayans Brothers sitcom, That Fine Fare. That's what I would watch after school.
Was it just called the Wayans Brothers? It was just called the Wayans Brothers, right?
Yeah. I think that is what it was called. But
I mean, I feel like most people, like, I don't know, I should say most people. I feel like I can remember like sort of what was on TV from like 3 to 4:30 when I would get home.
Yeah. I sunk a lot of my life and cognitive development into that. And I didn't even like some of the shows.
Saved by the Bell was on TBS for me.
I didn't even like some of the shows I was watching.
They're not good. There's a reason why they're on at like 3 in the afternoon, right?
Yeah.
When it's just like a bunch of dumb kids watching. You know what I mean? But like, so that would be that would be sort of my general approach with people, was to try to find one way to, like, one thing to relate to people about as sort of a tipping point. Because, you know, again, I think most people talk about, like, if you're in an NBA locker room, people talk about the same stuff over and over and over again, and they get bored with it. And it gets like, so whether you're going to come at people with some super interesting, innovative sort of thought about basketball, some challenging question about life, a band, whatever it is, music, food, restaurants, all of those different things. And whatever it is, like, you know, I guess this goes back to being a generalist. Like, that's what I would try to do.
Mm. And after a game, obviously, it's a different situation. After a game, it's
sure.
Or pertinent. Then, and now you capitalize on the fake relationship you've cultivated by getting what you want. Job. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know, I mean, I like, it's funny. Like, they are, like, the relationships are certainly faker than you think they are in the moment.
Yeah.
I think, like, certainly, there are people that you feel like, oh, like, this is like something, like, this is gonna sound all emo. This is something real that I have with this player or something like that. And like, these things, like, I mean, like, there are people that, like, you get along with and you know a lot of things about, and like, you know about their families and they know a little bit about your families. And like, there are some, like, you do form some actual, like, friendships, right? But like, those are few and far between. You know, mostly they are sort of,
I generally, I think afterwards is when it gets a little more real if it can.
For sure. For sure.
You know, you're not, there's no real responsibility. There's no corrupting influence of the job in either direction. And they often become different people, especially after they retire. I think players become people. They become well-rounded people after they retire because they have to grapple with who they are finally, instead of having it all hinged on this really high status job that is constant momentum and so many games and so much attention.
I mean, Ethan, too, think about it this way, right? Like, how is it possible to have sort of like an even-handed relationship when it's like you're having a conversation with somebody and it could be about, I don't know. I remember having a conversation with Grant Hill once about the New York Times going to the paywall, like when this first happened, right? And like, it was a really interesting conversation. Grant Hill, well-read person, somebody who, you know, in his household, like, newspaper subscriptions were very important. This is how I grew up. Like, we were talking about it, knew obviously that the two, talking to myself and Brad Turner, the two newspaper writers in the room, and was like, what are you guys doing about this? And it was like an interesting question. It was an interesting conversation. Conversation that could have lasted for 30 minutes. Grant Hill was in his last season with the Clippers. He wasn't going to play that night. And then it's like, you're having this conversation and then a PR person comes over, taps and said, 45, got to go. Like, yeah. It's like not an even-handed relationship. Like, your time with this person is done.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And that conversation never got finished. You know what I mean? And it was like, it was just a filler thing. You know what I mean? Like, what am I going to do? Watch film or talk to these schmoes? You know what I mean? And I think over time, like, those conversations become a little more real. You get to more kind of core truths, but you're right. Like, there's always this element of, like, you're just kind of there. Because you have to be. And they sort of always resent that you were there.
I do miss it. I mean, I don't.
For sure.
I miss just having those dynamics and having people I knew back when I was a beat writer. And really feeling like I knew those Warriors teams in a way that I don't know the current ones. And I can't. It's just impossible. And they're so young, some of the guys, too, that it's now even more impossible. It's just I don't even know what you're into.
I think, and tell me if this ever happened to you when you were beat writering. I was going to call it beating, but that might be. Yeah, we need a better verb for it. The Clippers had a long, like, East Coast trip. I want to say it was like seven games, like 14 days, like longest of the season, right?
Yeah.
Like 13 days or something like that. Like, just, it's awful.
Brutal. It's brutal.
Yeah. And so game four, this was in Doc Rivers' first year with the Clippers. The Clippers play in Boston. It's like a Thursday night TNT game, which starts at, I think, like 8:30 or something local, right? So it's like a late start. And it's a super emotional game. Doc's game, first game back in Boston. Crowd's super into it. Clippers are good. Celtics are not, and they play great. because they want to stick it to Doc, and it's like, whatever. Okay. So the Clippers win that game. The next morning, we're on a flight to New York for a back-to-back. The Clippers are going to play the Nets. And this is a this is the Pierce-KG Nets, but both players are out. The Brooklyn is playing terrible, right? So I remember getting off the plane in New York, being exhausted, and like getting like that that shot of like New York City, like dopamine, you know, where it's like you get like all this energy. You're going to go eat at a great restaurant. Like you're going to walk around the city and like you're going to do all this stuff. And I felt really, really good. And I remember I got to the arena, walked into the Nets press room, like looked around and was just like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Like, I need to go home. Like, it was like my world fell apart. Yeah. My energy levels like completely vanished. Like, I was like near like anxiety, like breakdown. No, like, it was bad.
And I'm sure the people listening, it's very abstract to them and they have no reason to care about us. I mean, people think that this is the greatest job in the world. So how do you
but
complain?
It's just like it's 12 straight nights away from home.
It's hard. It scrambles your brain. It completely scrambles your brain in a way that nothing you will do, no other job we have will do anything like this to our brains. Where, I mean, I explain it in a very short way. You've got to factor in that, A, there's the whole rush of the job. You're up at night like a vampire. The NBA game is designed for a single serving. It's not designed for the cumulative effect of that level of noise and energy blasting at your face repeatedly. And I just remember a road trip. There's a weird cultural thing happening to your brain. I remember a road trip where it was 5 games in 7 nights, where it went L.A. to Salt Lake City to Memphis to Minneapolis to New Orleans, and just the cultural whiplash of that. Yep. In addition to the weather of going, it was literally 0 degrees in Minneapolis to New Orleans where it was 80 degrees. And I just remember a couple laughing and putting shades on each other as they got off the plane because they were rescued effectively.
The reason why I bring up the Brooklyn story, I was going to say, is so then like the Clippers go out that night. Right. And I think the game was on ESPN.
Dan, I didn't want to hear the conclusion of you, the guest. I wanted to talk about me and my road trip. Sorry. Continue.
So they go out and they get destroyed. Like they lose by like 35. Like I think Doc gets ejected. And it was like one of the first times I realized that it's not like, and it's not always like a 1-to-1, but it's like, you know, like that level of exhaustion, that level of like mental fatigue that like you're feeling as a writer, like the team has to be feeling it too. Yeah. Has to, you know what I mean? Like, because like they're
It's like recently the study recently where they said that they can predict a level of corona cases by testing a city's sewage system and seeing how much is in the city's sewage system. They'll know. Like we're the sewage system.
I think the best way to explain to people who haven't had that job is like, so like when you travel like full time with an NBA team, there are two things that I always found that I would never remember. And that's like one, like what day of the week it was. Like that's like obviously like an NBA, like
people. Every day is Wednesday.
Every day is Wednesday. Every day is Tuesday, whatever. Right. Like they're all the same, which I think people are experiencing now in like a really bizarre way. Right. It's sort of like, I saw somebody tweet this. I thought it was great. Like that people's like the best part about The Last Dance was that it was like, it reminded everybody that it was Sunday.
It's funny. I'm almost going the other way where now I'm aware of it because I'm not on the NBA schedule because there's no NBA right now. But yes, it would make sense if people were drifting. And
I think in my second year, somebody, an assistant coach told me this, that you should always take a photo of your hotel room number.
Huh?
Because you don't remember.
It's a good suggestion by Ty Lue.
and it's totally true. And
I love the mean thing of guessing the guy.
Who it was. Was that Ty Lue? I don't think it was. but it's like, it's one of those things like where think about it, right? Like, cause I've done this before. It's like, you're in Atlanta, the second night of a back-to-back, you're staying at a hotel that's near the arena. Like there's a bar in between, shop, you have a couple of beers after the game. And it's like, you go to
I acted surprised by what you said, but I actually lied. Like I started doing that. I don't know if somebody suggested it, but I started taking
a
picture. Yeah.
Also, but it's like also a bad idea too, because it makes you like it's super easy. Like you lose your phone, like you're gonna probably get murdered.
No.
Dude, just like you're telling your friend, where you're staying. Dude.
I never thought about that. No. But yeah, I guess I was slightly okay. So what were your favorite NBA cities? I didn't think we were going this direction, but I'm curious. Give me top five.
Okay, I love Toronto.
Boo. Okay, sorry. Let's continue it. I like to provoke the Canadians. I like to provoke them.
I like
them.
Portland. It's
all oh, yes.
A lot. I like Portland, Toronto. I mean, New York is great, but that's like kind of a boring answer. Okay, like my controversial... It's not a top five, but and I've argued this with people forever. My controversial city that I like in the NBA that no one else likes is Milwaukee.
Wow.
Like, I like Milwaukee.
I haven't come through the new arena, so I can't, I can't.
Gorgeous. It's great. The media seats are terrible, but like the arena is awesome. They did a really
all new arenas are like
to the level where it's like like you can get like a 10% worse version of like the burger that people really like in Milwaukee, like that they have a stand in the arena, right? Like so obviously it's not the same as like going to the restaurant, but it's like you can get like a slightly worse version of like the cheese curds that are like popular in town, or like the taco place that's like popular in town. I like when arenas have like that type of stuff, because we don't get to spend any like super amount of like you get like one meal like yeah. essentially right like you can pick one spot, so it's a way to kind of like kill two birds. But Milwaukee like growing up was like an amazing summer city as someone who lived in Chicago. Like it has like people forget like it has like this huge lakefront and has like an incredible music festival that like lasts for like 2 weeks. Like some of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life have been in Milwaukee. I saw Pearl Jam open for Tom Petty in Milwaukee, wow. which was like a really, really fun show and stuff like that. I get that it's like a smaller place, but it's got some really cool neighborhoods, some great bars. I really like beer. I really like kind of like that stick to the ribs, like German food. You know what I mean? Like Milwaukee to me has always been like a sleeper city. I guess that's a more interesting question to you, Ethan. What's your favorite NBA city that other people think is a bad NBA city.
I've been open about it. It's Salt Lake City. That's the one I like, or AKA Mormon Denver.
Yeah. No, people, Salt Lake's great.
Did I see you there? No, I saw you recently in Sacramento, which is also a little bit underrated. I kind of like what Sacramento's become, and I like the new arena downtown, but that's neither here nor there. It's also
Salt Lake too is like also it's the thing that I enjoy most like culturally about Salt Lake City. I don't know if this matches sort of your experiences with it. I did see you in Salt Lake this year, I think.
Yeah, it's all blur.
So obviously there is a very conservative undertone to that city, but then like there's like the people who like rebel against that rebel so hard that like there is like I was there on like a Wednesday night. And I saw like some of the drunkest people like I've ever seen in my life, like walking around Salt Lake City, like people just like really, really trying to piss.
It had two Miller Lights.
they've changed their booze laws there now. Like for a while, it was like you could only have like 4% alcohol beer on draft, which seems like, I mean, so silly. Like it just seems like you're just creating like extra like you can buy a
trying to legislate moderation.
Bottle. Yeah. But it's like, you can buy a can of beer that could be 30% alcohol if you wanted. But like, if you're going to pour it from a tap, it can only be 4%. Anyways, but like the point being is like, I find like people there have like culturally swung. So like I've been to like a punk rock pizza place like there that's like open till like 3 a.m. And again, like it is like, you don't feel like you're in Salt Lake City at times. So like, I do enjoy sort of the dichotomy of that.
What I love about it is it's definitively different from every other city in the United States.
That's where they should do the bubble, by the way.
Oh my God.
You could, I mean, you talk about players staying, you want to keep players in their hotel rooms. Like you could do it in Salt Lake.
Potentially. I mean, you go around the city and you have these beautiful mountains surrounding you, and also these all of these temples, all these Mormon temples. There's just nothing. I mean, that's what I would appreciate about it. And also, I mean, boom, airport, hotel, arena downtown, all of that. So simple, so easy, concentrated. So there was this ease of use that I always appreciated, beautiful scenery, and also just novelty. This is a novel place to be for me. This is culturally quite different. And so I never was with the complaining about it or not liking it. I always enjoyed coming through there. So that is in my top five. I'm being a little hipster. I'm probably putting it in the top five just to start a conversation over a more deserving city, if I'm totally honest about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think like we all have, like, you know, I mean, like, I love going to Chicago, but like, I don't enjoy Chicago the way that a lot of people do, because when I go to Chicago, I stay with my family. Yeah. Right. So it's like a different experience than, you know, like, you go and you stay in the city and you go and do stuff. Like, that's just not, that's not my experience, like, with that city. So, but I mean, I think, like, again, and maybe this goes towards being a generalist, every city in the NBA has something rewarding to offer, like, because they're still cities.
Or right? It's like, a little weather dependent. My least favorite to come through is Memphis, because Memphis in January is just
it's always raining.
It's just bleak and it's gray and it's just, it's not, you're not getting but much there are Memphis-y.
For sure thing, but there are for sure things to do in Memphis.
Well, what I'm saying is that you go there for a playoff series in May and then it's a, but a da 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 da. It's like, ah, barbecue and festivals. Like, suddenly
what do you think the Blues are?
I know. It's like that summertime song that they play in Wedding Crashers.
Those aren't the Blues.
No, I'm not doing the Blues. I'm just more talking about Memphis. The vibe. Just talking about the vibe of the summertime in general. I don't have a blues song. What would be your Memphis blues song? How would that go?
I don't know that I have like a good one either. Like, for whatever reason, like,
just made up a song, like, and the summertime's like, and now we're in Memphis and we're eating barbecue.
Walking in Memphis. You could have done like Walking in Memphis.
Walking in Memphis. Eating the barbecue. I started singing Oklahoma, like, oh, what a beautiful Memphis.
I mean, all of these cities, right? Like, you can go in and you can stereotype them, at least, right? Like, you go to Memphis, like, you can get barbecue. And, like, that's, like, you know, it's good. You can do other stuff in Memphis, and there are other parts of Memphis that are great. Like, our friend and your colleague, Bill Oram, has an awesome dive bar that he likes in Memphis that's, like, you can ask the bartender, it's supposedly haunted. Like, they'll give you like a ghost tour upstairs. Mm. Like, while they do like those, why can't I think of it? Like grill top, like, cheeseburgers. Right. Like, so like the place smells like cheeseburgers, like stale beer and like ghosts. It's awesome. It's a great bar. Great jukebox too. Wonderful. And like, you know, so like, yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, if you're there for a week, you know, I there's probably 25 NBA cities I'd rather be in. But for like 2 or 3 days, like, I like it. Plus, for our jobs now too, there's no one ever there. It's a great place for us to go.
Yeah.
Because I like Oklahoma City, and you see people, no one else.
I'm not saying it's top 10 or anything. I like going through Oklahoma City, going to, what is it? Kitchen 324 and Mahogany Steakhouse. And again, very concentrated, very compact.
Foster Hall is really cool. It's like a homemade, like, sausage, like, German open air German beer hall, like, in Midtown. It's a cool place.
This is the thing I miss, and I think we'll be missing it for some time, because the nature of travel has been altered for how long, who knows. But this seeing America, the seeing America thing that you would get, and you can't be a beat writer forever. You burn out. I know some people have done it. I don't know how they do it. You need to transition out of it at some point, but they are cherished memories to have seen the country and have had all of these events.
And that's something that I mean, like, you're right. Like, you know, like, I think a lot of people are like right now, like, are holding on to stuff that they hope that this doesn't change. Right. Like the hope is like, obviously, like, things are going to change for a little while, like one thing that I hope that doesn't change is that I hope that I can still go to these places, because it's great. Like, it's so lucky to have, for all of like the bullshit that comes with traveling all the time and all the things you miss and the strain it puts on your relationships at home and all that stuff, yes. Which is true. That stuff is all very, very true. Like, I don't know how I mean, maybe this is lame, but like, it's cool to be like, oh, I've got a spot in Boston I really like. Like, I've got like a pokey spot that's like awesome in Boston. And I've got a fried chicken place in Portland that I love to go to. My favorite pizza's in Phoenix. And like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you have spots.
As is mine.
You have spots, right? Like you get to have spots everywhere.
Has Amin taken you to that place?
To what, Bianco?
Yeah.
I only drink with Amin in Phoenix. I've gone by myself.
You got to go with Amin. He knows Bianco or Bianca. What is it again? The guy.
I think it's Chris Bianco, right?
Amin knows the guy. So if you go with Amin, you get the roll out the red carpet treatment, and he sits down. If he's in the house, I mean, he sat down with us, and
I'm craving that right now. But like, yeah, I mean, I think like it's great to
You can drive to that. You can drive that.
Yeah, he was going to open a restaurant in LA too before all of this. I don't know if that got off the ground or not.
It's restaurants are a tough scene right now.
Is this Pack the Knives? Did we just transition into the Pack the Knives spot?
I don't know. I don't know enough about that show to have commentary on Top Chef other than. Well, I won't say it immediately came to mind, or maybe I will. I always thought that maybe Padma was on Quaaludes with the whole. I mean, I thought I knew monotone trail offs. I thought I knew monotone trail offs growing up in San Diego, but hers is very impressive.
Very calm. Chefs, pack your knives.
Yeah,
I like it. That's great. So, what is sort of your feeling? I'm gonna hijack here real quick. What is your feeling about Orlando? What do you ultimately think happens? And then, do you think whatever plan they have, do you think it actually gets finished? Does it go to completion?
I think it's feasible enough to finish it. I think it makes sense to me. And not being an epidemiologist, I can see them pulling it off. And I'm not going to go. I can't really see a pathway to doing it. I think if it was in Vegas, then I would be doing everything I could and I would be driving there. But the last thing anybody wants to do right now is to get in a tin can and just be in some air for 5 hours and fly across the country. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll feel differently about it. Maybe the opportunity will arise. If the Athletic came to me and said, hey, we want you there definitively, then it would be a decision. I'm a little bit bummed out that whatever it is, I can't probably see it up close and see how it goes. I will say this. I think it's feasible that they pull it off. I think they'll be able to pull it off. I also think that there's a danger that this thing is not going to be what so many people assume, that there's an assumption that you are going to get some kind of bonus boost from people wanting to return to normalcy. And it's The Last Dance did tremendous numbers, and the NFL draft, it was so big. And yeah, but those things were really good and had really just intrinsic drives to watch them. And so a lot of whether this works or not is going to be based on how good the product is. And if people tune into this and it feels like a goofy kind of G League showcase, the novelty is going to wear off and it will be ignored and it will not go well. And so the NBA has got a really tough job ahead to not only make this safe, but to make it feel entertaining and make it feel real. And here's the other thing I'll say. I feel as though there is a tremendous incentive against stating the obvious on this. I've seen people say there's not going to be an asterisk with this. You know, people said asterisk for the 99 lockout, and that's still a respected championship by the Spurs. It is not the same thing. This is not the same thing as that. This is going to be a question. Maybe if the Lakers win it. If the Lakers win it and people can say to themselves, well, that would have happened anyway. And there are so many Laker fans that – you know, there's so many Laker fans that they are going to be the best kind of populist propagandists that money can't even buy. They do it for free. I think maybe it will be remembered well. But if it's anybody but the Lakers and maybe the Bucks, it is going to get slapped to the asterisk. And I think there's a lot of incentive against saying that because we want some basketball and we want it to happen. But well, there's no way this is something that's going to be a championship.
Well, hearing you say that makes it feel like now all of a sudden this is the perfect title for the Clippers to win.
Yes.
In the sense that it's like, you know, they I think are a team that is certainly capable of winning an NBA title. They have an NBA championship roster. They were certainly in the conversation for the best team in the league, despite not always playing that. They might have the best player in the playoffs on their team. All of this stuff, right? Like, so if nothing had happened, if the season finished the way it was originally scheduled, if I told you that the Clippers were in the NBA finals and playing for it, like, you wouldn't have been like, you would have been like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But you would have been like, oh, shut up, you're a liar, right? Yeah. That being said, you know, if they win this, even no matter what happens, like
and I think they're the best team.
They will, that asterisk will be huge.
Oh,
people will slap that on.
And it will be in their own city where the cries of asterisks are loud.
They'll make the NBA, like, you know, Nike might put it on the uniforms. They might be like the Clippers with the asterisk like right next to it. Like, I just think like that's how people will view that, because that's like how people want that narrative to work. Right. Yeah. In some ways, because it's familiar and it's easy. I agree with you. I think like the asterisk thing is sort of like, to me, it'll matter. Like, and this is one of the things NBA has to figure out, right? Is like, it's in their best interest to have, like, there are like four or five teams, I think, that like realistically, like the NBA wants to see standing, like at the end. Like, this is not the year, like, that you want some like total like weird like Cinderella thing to happen where, like the eighth seeded Brooklyn Nets without Kevin Durant make some crazy run or something like that, right? Like that's not in the league's best interest, because it devalues sort of like,
you need a sense of legitimacy. It can't be like
100%. Yeah, 100%. Right. Like, is, but at the same time, like, this is also seemingly going to be like one of the most high variance situations you can have. I mean, you know, imagine a series instead of a player getting ejected for and missing a game because of, you know, some antics or, you know, a groin kick or something like that, you know, instead of that happening, like, what if like the Bucks make the finals, right? And Giannis gets Postmates and ends up with coronavirus. You know what I mean? Like that is like through no fault of his own, right? Or if one of the on-campus workers, you know, contracts it or something like that. Like, and now this is to say nothing of something like actually terrible happening.
Yeah.
Which is somebody getting really sick or, God forbid, dying.
Well, that possibility is there. I'm going to choose to be an optimist about it and think that with so many controls and the bubble and the heat, theoretically heat matters, although, God, you hear so much contradictory information all the time.
Sure.
It's difficult to really know, but I'm going to be an optimist and just choose to believe that.
Look at you.
Yeah. Look at me trying to be an optimist in a way. I think they can pull it off. To me, the big thing is going to be, how the hell are you going to have a season after this? This is tough, but this is the easy one. What follows is the next one. And I think that there is a temptation emotionally to think, well, if they pull it off, normalcy is restored if we can do this. But that's not actually how real life works. And they're actually going to have to do a far harder thing after doing this thing.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I think, again, you know, putting everybody in one place to play for, I think maybe a month and a half or whatever, however long they're going to be there is one thing. You know, deciding how you're going to hold a season and what it's going to look like. And are you going to travel everywhere? These are questions that, I mean, I feel like obviously they're having these conversations and stuff like that, and they're part of the arithmetic for trying to figure out how to do what's going to happen this year. But yeah, I mean, I think that's right. Like, ultimately, that's what the scariest part of all of this stuff is. In addition to like people getting sick and people dying, is that, like, I think as human beings, we want to know what's ahead of us.
Yeah,
like we want levels of a certain level of control. And right now, it's hard to know what tomorrow's going to look like. And I think that's what, you know, like, that's what's scary. At least that's what scares me.
So wait, what do you think? Because you've been reporting on this. What do you envision? What's your take on the group play stuff? Soccer silver? What's your take? And we'll close out on all this.
I think one side is, I think everybody's going to go to Florida. I think that is like where the biggest momentum has been. I think there's been a recent sort of momentum shift away from sending everybody. Up until a few weeks ago, I think there were a lot of people in the league that, you know, were still thinking like, well, we can send everybody, we can satisfy all these RSNs. We can play regular season games. It'll be good for the playoff teams, you know, to get a couple games against some teams that, you know, like against the Warriors, like assuming maybe Steph doesn't play, or if the Portland comes back and Damian Lillard's not going to play, like it'll be good for these other teams that kind of have these glorified exhibitions. I think that thinking has shifted pretty dramatically, actually. And I think now most of the momentum is towards some sort of direct to playoff model. Or a better way to put it is like not everybody's going to go. Yeah. Right? That you're not going to put 30 teams in Orlando. It's going to be 16 or 20 or 22 or whatever the sort of, I think they're trying to figure out what the magic number is on that.
The magic number to include Zion, horrible.
I can't say magic now too, because it's like, ugh, Orlando pun. I think you're right. And I mean, people in New Orleans will point to like the schedule modeling that'll say that, like, you know, like
there's a schedule going forward. I don't know what Zion's been up to. For all I know, all he's been doing is eating raw beef and kale in New Orleans in quarantine for the last few months. But are you so confident when you roll that guy out into a tournament situation all of a sudden that it's not a massive injury risk? I mean, is it that important that you make the playoffs in this crazy quarantine? That's my take.
Well, yeah, right. And I mean, I think like for him, I don't know. It's an interesting question, right? Because the calculus, I think there is a bunch of – like it's important for the league, right? Like because that's like one other person that people conceivably would want to watch, right, is Zion Williamson, you know, versus – I mean, John Moran is an exciting player and stuff like that, but I mean he's not like
– America doesn't know who
exactly.
he is.
Yeah. Exactly, right? So I think like that's interesting, and obviously I think there's value for young players to play important basketball. Early in their career, I think that's really important in terms of, you know, just being in those situations, like getting it out of the way, like learning it. But again, it's hard to know, like, I mean, if there'll ever be anything like this, if this is just sort of like a sunk experience, right? Like, is this a total one-off where there's nothing to be gained from, like you said, like going and playing in some sort of like glorified, like summer league or G League showcase type environment? Like, you know, is that really quote unquote playoff experience? I think the one thing we'll see is that I do believe that if there is a title on the line, right? Of course there is I think we'll see a different level of intensity out of players. Right. Yeah. And so whether that means the games look like they did in The Last Dance, where it's like 87-78 because nobody can make a shot, because nobody's played.
Or we've got Skinny Harden averaging 45 a game.
Exactly, right? Like he's just been spin biking every day for the last, like.
By the way, do you think that's an indicator that if Harden is in this kind of shape, have the other guys maybe also gotten into this kind of shape, and maybe it's travel that's making them fat? Because you would have thought it would go the other
way. For sure. I think what I'll do is I'll project my personal experiences onto those of like other people, because it's just easier. I think being at home it's way easier to eat healthy when you're at home. It's way easier to regiment exercise when you're at home than when you're exhausted on planes and you're in your third or fourth city and stuff like that. And then when you're just like, when you're leaving and then you're coming back, like you don't have, you know, at least you know, and I'm sure you had experiences too. Like when you go out to the road for a little while and then you come home, like you have all sorts of commitments. Like you have to spell your wife. You have to do more with your children. You have to like take on these other stuff that you didn't do before because you were gone. Now that you're home, like you have time to spread that stuff out. Right. So like you, I think you do have more in some sense, like more like me time. Right. So when you see like hard, I think
you've got the Peloton bike. So, you know, you do have that advantage. You do have that little, edge on the normie, as do the NBA players.
But like, yeah, I think like what else is there to do now, I guess. And what you could either snack or you could do what James Harden's doing. And, you know what I mean? And I think, I think guys will come back. It'll be really interesting because it'll test sort of the old notion of like, quote unquote, basketball shape. Right. Which is that you've got to be out and playing that, like you can't simulate it no matter what you do. And you got to be playing games. Like, I do think a lot of these guys are going to be in amazing shape because that's all they've been doing for the last 3 months. There's been nothing else to do.
Yeah. Well, Dame Lillard doesn't do pickup and he seems to be pretty good at the old basketball thing. So, sure. Yeah, it will be interesting. It will be interesting at the very least. I don't know if it will have the imprimatur of a real championship. I don't know, but it'll be something on TV to watch. And that's something that it appears that we are in need of. Dan, you were fantastic. We would love to have you back. Next time, maybe we'll ask you to give a rundown of the various NBA players, film taste, movie taste, music taste. So you'll have to be prepared with that. You'll have to come, you know,
Ethan, with your dossier. Ethan, I will come back under one condition.
What is it?
I don't want to know what we're going to talk about because I want it to be organic.
That's
what I say. Call
okay.
it back.
Okay. Well, call then we won't back. Talk
Full
about
circle.
That. We might talk about anything. I won't even text you. I'll call you to organize it. I'll
the
call you to pitch
of humanity.
It.
Yeah.
Life, chaos. Something with Jeff Goldblum and the water droplet when he's hitting on Why am I drawing a blank? She's an amazing actress. I can't draw a blank on the actress in Jurassic Park. Who is incredible. This is killing me, Dad. This is where you save me. What's her name?
Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. What is her name?
This is killing me.
No. She's having a moment too right now.
She's always having a moment.
No, she's having like a real moment. Why can't I think of her name either? She was on
Lauren Dern?
Yes!
Lauren Dern!
Jade! Oh, saving us.
Just letting it sit there.
Oh, God. It's killing us.
Davis's ex.
She was really good in that divorce movie with Adam Driver as a lawyer.
A marriage story?
Marriage story. It was really a divorce story. Yeah, marriage story. Pretty good movie. Pretty good movie. I recommend it. Yeah. Okay. Woiki, man, thanks for stopping by. I have no fancy intro. Enjoy the lack of basketball and the hot weather, everybody. Enjoy that stuff. Enjoy your trip to the Ozarks.